Welcome to episode 143 of The Force Geeks, a Star Wars podcast. We're thrilled to have you join us as we delve into the latest news and updates from the galaxy far, far away. And this is our 17th show of our fourth season. We got a lot of shows and we have an exciting lineup for you guys today. I'm so pumped for this. We're going to jump right in. In our pre-recorded interview, Diana Lee Inosanto, who played Morgan Elsbeth, also known as the Magistrate from The Mandalorian, she's reprising her role in Ahsoka. She's discussing her martial arts background with us, her experience as a stuntwoman, and what we can expect from the new series Ahsoka that she's in. Yeah, you saw her in the teaser video for that at Celebration. She's including some intense action into this talk, collaboration with Rosario Dawson, her character's devotion to Grand Admiral Thrawn, and her bond with the evil characters that she shares the screen with. This is just a great interview. I'm excited to share this with you guys. We also address the headline that the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser hotel experience at Walt Disney World, it's shutting down. It's permanently closing. We'll talk about that, the impact on Star Wars fans and park visitors. Plus, actor Freddie Prinze Jr.'s reluctance to return as Jedi Kanan Jarrus, that's being examined. We're delving into the reasons for his decision and the potential impact on the Star Wars universe moving forward. We also delve into the rumors surrounding Dave Filoni's forthcoming Star Wars film, which is rumored to be a reimagining of the beloved novel Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn, analyzing its implications and significance for fans. Natasha Lou Bordizzo's announcement that she will portray Sabine Wren in the live-action role in Ahsoka and what weapon she's wielding. It's an exciting one you're going to like. It's adding anticipation to the upcoming series and also getting us fans very excited for what we'll see from the continuation of some of these Star Wars Rebels characters. And lastly, May 25th. That marks the 40th anniversary of Chris and I, our favorite Star Wars movie, Return of the Jedi. And we're now
It is the best.
We're discovering a potentially darker and monumentally different ending for the film that would have completely reshaped the saga. We're going to share that, what that was. And I'm telling you, man, it is just wild. I'm Nate Custer, coming to you from Northwest Arkansas. My fellow Force Geek from Seattle, Jake Scott, he's off this episode dealing with some illness in the home with his kids. Our heart's there for you, buddy. Philia, we wish we could have you here. But Chris Ridlon is my co-pilot on this one, and we're pumped because we have just the best show for you. We have so much, Chris. I'm just so excited for this. And I know you weren't able to take part in that interview with Diana, and I'm so sorry that wasn't able to happen, but you're going to go ahead and share that with you today. And Chris, all that different stuff I talked about, what's standing out to you as far as the biggest news of the week?
Man, I can't wait to hear the interview and talk about it with you. So that definitely is the biggest for me, but the Star Cruiser closing is just, we were just talking about before we started the show. That just is kind of a little bit demoralizing, a little bit soul crushing for us.
It is.
We all went there and, you know, we all were talking about how we'd like to take our kids there in a couple of years. And, I don't know. Anyway, it's a bummer.
It's soul crushing. I had such a great time at that. We're going to talk about, yes, the expense was a big deal to a lot of people. We have a pretty good indication that that was the reason why it wasn't booked to the extent it should. We'll talk about what we thought worked well for it. Maybe some lessons they can learn for the future and what they can do. But gosh, I hope they bring it back in some capacity. It was just amazing.
Hopefully they can reimagine it in a slightly cheaper format.
Yep, absolutely. As always, want to give a big shout out to DailySuperhero.com, run by our good friend and fellow Force Geek, Dan Wolf and Daniel, and it's where you can get your superhero, your Star Wars news. It's all for you there. In addition to supporting Dan, we ask that you also support us by subscribing to this pod and leaving us a positive review. We're all over the place when it comes to social media. You can hit us up on our Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, and just search for us at The Force Geeks, and you can also join our Facebook community group to interact with us there. And actually, you decide the topics we cover there. On top of that, we have a YouTube page, and I've been posting to it religiously over the last about month and a half, so you actually have new content that's being posted there. You can see full podcasts there, and if you didn't get a chance to see some of these interviews we did before, old ones are there from the Book of Boba Fett actors that we talked to. And I'm actually, at the time that you are able to download this podcast, you will be able to watch in the entirety the full uncut interview with Diana Lee Inosanto. Again, she plays the Magistrate, Morgan Elsbeth. She's talking about what you can expect from the upcoming Ahsoka episode. She talks about working on The Mandalorian. It's all there, and she's just amazing. So you can watch that there. That's there right now. You can check it out. Though we create the show every week right here in the U.S., we know know we have an audience all over the globe, and we appreciate our international friends for sure. Thank you so much for joining us on that, including our listeners in Valladolid, Spain, and here in the States, we got to say what up to Bangor, Maine. We appreciate your support as well as your friendship in the Force. Okay, Chris, let's just dive in, man, because there's so much on this episode to get into. The first thing on our agenda is the headline that shook the Star Wars community this past week. We were talking about it just here a moment ago. The Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel at Walt Disney World, it's shutting down. It's shutting down for good. We're going to explore the reasons behind this and what some might say was a totally expected decision and its implications as we look ahead. Chris, you, myself, Jake, we had the great fortune, thanks to your lovely wife's great idea of treating you and bringing us along for the ride to go to the Star Cruiser. And that was such an amazing experience. We have a former podcast where we talked about all the fun we had. Dan's been to it too. What was your takeaway from hearing this news in terms of why you think it failed? I mean, is it just, do you think it's solely the price tag? What do you think is the biggest failure?
I think it's the price point. So, you know, yeah. Iger coming back in, you know, he's got to stop the bleeding, you know, he's got to stop the losses. So I think he was looking with very hard lens at anything that was underperforming in their portfolio. And, you know, you've seen the articles where the bookings were dropping off and they were canceling cruises because they basically didn't have enough bookings to support it. So you got to think it's just the main expense of all the characters, you know, and some of the technology. But really, I think like hiring that many actors, you know, like and having them, have to do that level of work, you know, was probably the expense. So
it's intense.
But it's sad, man. I mean, like, you know, that's what made it fun. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, what I wish is they would have just like maybe they do like a season or something like, hey, we're going to do from this, you know, this point to this point. I guess it'd be hard to, you know, hard with that many people if you're not using them all the time. That's the problem. The sunk cost of running an operation like that in terms of, you know, having the, you know, all the people making the food and all the people cleaning and like all that stuff like is just huge. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see if they can repurpose it, you know, like. I don't know. I mean, it'll be really fascinating to see if they can come up with a way to use it. I just wish they could. I mean, they have all that technology. They have all the like the physical infrastructure, like everything there. Like, you got to think there's got to be a way they could make it, you know, just skinny down a little and then, you know, maybe just run like less of them, like have a season. I don't know.
Well, and let's go over the details. So the last Star Cruiser experience will be the end of September. That's what's going on. And they canceled all reservations that they could take right now. So this will close out the end of the month in September. The Star Cruiser, like they went ahead and...
Well, so they've paused. Yeah,
they paused reservations. It for now.
And then they're basically rebooking people that will be on September.
That's exactly 30th where I was going
earlier. And then I think once they're done with that, you know, whatever's left will open up. But you know, now people are going to be willing to pay.
Yeah. Yep.
It's
so
the last ones.
They've paused it. They've reached out to all the folks who had later bookings to offer them the first dibs on any of the remaining open dates at this point, which there was a lot of them. So that's got to be worth mentioning that they had a lot of open voyages. They had started scheduling to be further apart because they didn't have enough reservations. That was the first step we saw a few months back. Now it's just they're calling it quits. And then once they've finished with all those folks who had later bookings and rebooked and gave them the chance at first dibs on remaining voyages, then they'll open it up, and I'm sure those will probably fill up because there's a lot of people who are just like, well, we got to get it in now if we're going to get it in at all, ever. So I would say that the other failing, perhaps it's worth talking about the fact that it was only sequel trilogy focused. I think that kind of, I saw a lot of people say if it included the original trilogy or the prequels, that would have been something. The technology they used in that setting and how everything worked out was so much fun because they're using the NFC technology to know where you are on the ship. When you're there, you know, you go aboard the ship and you get to go and have your own personal story, your own personal Star Wars adventure. You could be dark side, light side, in between a rogue, a smuggler, a double crosser, a double agent, you know, whatever you wanted to do. that's a lot of investment in the technology, and everyone knows who you are because as you're using your phone, it tells you, it tells those actors and those folks involved whose story.
The magic bands too.
Absolutely. All the magic bands, everything was there because you're using your phones to interact with the data pad and your story. And that was being tracked, what you had actually done. Your magic band tells you who's walking into the room. The actors knew the stories they were supposed to be working on. It was incredibly advanced stuff, unlike anything I've ever seen anywhere else. It's such a marvel.
It was amazing.
It's such a marvel. It really was. Now, are they going to take that technology and use it elsewhere? I hope so. And I hope they do some reworking. I think one of the failures is being so focused at the Disney parks on the sequel trilogy. I understand that they want something that is there, like they've created this new era of Star Wars, but you got to focus on what made Star Wars excellent and you go back to the beginning. It started with the beginning. You got to have that. And even the prequel trilogy has a lot of love now because the kids that grew up with that as their Star Wars, they want that experience too. Ignoring two-thirds of Star Wars that exists is the biggest mistake that Disney could make. And I think that's the problem. And I guess the biggest mistake after the price point, because I think the price point ultimately was the thing that killed it all. I mean, I would see like maybe half that, $3,000, I would be more apt to do that and do it multiple times. But also the need to change up the story so that if you are going to be a repeat customer, you need to have a different experience. And you can have a different experience deciding what path you want to follow and do that. But I think only having the sequel trilogy is a mistake. I think that was a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, so we talked about it, a couple things. One, you know, Star Tours, it has been really phenomenally successful since they renovated
the 80s.
Well, I mean, it was successful since the 80s because it was the only Star Wars thing anywhere. But that said, like once the prequels came out, they kind of renovated. And now, like for those that haven't been on Star Tours, not really a spoiler, but there's basically like plot lines from the entire, you know, Star Wars
saga.
Canon.
Yeah.
And it's randomizes. Basically, you get like an intro, like two or three like middles and like an ending. And it's completely randomized which ones you get. And so there's like, hundreds to thousands of combinations.
Yeah.
And it covers the whole canon. So I mean, there's ways with that technology you could do that stuff. I think it would be more difficult with the Star Cruiser, but I just think it's the expense band. So you'll note when Galaxy's Edge first opened at both parks, there were a lot more what you would call NPCs, like, you know, basically like cast members walk around just being, you know,
right,
random background Star Wars people. They've really cut down on that. Now they have, you know, like a couple stormtroopers that walk around, Rey and Chewie, and then occasionally Rey's buddy, I can't remember her name, pilot, rebel pilot type.
Yeah.
That's about it. Like, and Kylo Ren, I guess. So, and Imperial officer.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I mean, they really cut back on that quite a bit. And I think, you know, probably that's the expense again. So I don't know. I mean, in terms of the price point, I wouldn't say, I mean, the Star Cruiser is definitely more than a Disney hotel, but it wasn't like ridiculously more. Like you could get to, like you said, where it's like $3,000 to where it's within striking distance of staying at one of the other hotels.
Right. Right.
And I think especially if you combine that with like you stay at one of the other hotels, like what they should have done was had a Star Wars themed hotel you stay at. You go on the Star Cruiser for a voyage, and then you return to that. And that maybe could capture a lot more people. And then, like you said, just have the option. You know, what we talked about on our original podcast, when we talked about our visit there, you know, you could have a couple different adventures and, you know, either intersperse different things or just be like, hey, you know, the next 6 months, you know, these cruises are this, or, you know, these cruises are, you know, like Old Republic. These cruises are, you know, original trilogy. The biggest thing that really blows my mind is they have not, Mandalorian is literally their most successful IP right now.
And how do you not incorporate it?
How have they not incorporated anywhere in any of that stuff? It's not even in Star Tours. Like,
just now showing up in Galaxy's Edge. Just now. Yeah, just now. You see Mando walking around in Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, I had
Edge
not
now.
Seen that. Okay.
It's relatively new in the last like month and a half, 2 months, I think, just started, which... Finally, it's about time. And that's actually something I should point out that Dan said, that he fully expected season 3 of The Mandalorian to include a trip to Batuu as a cross-promotional ability for Disney to tie that in. So it makes sense to see him there in Batuu in Galaxy's Edge. And that's kind of a lost opportunity to kind of work that in. You could have done it without even shoehorning it. Like, he needed to go contact someone at Batuu and go to the Dark Spires, you know.
Well, Smuggler's Run is just like Star Tours. You should be able to reprogram that thing to
absolutely
do any time period that the Millennium Falcon has appeared in, and you should make it that way. If I were them, I would do like a X-Wing or a TIE Fighter, like a, you know, Starship Simulator thing. And again, randomize it and let it be like, you know, whatever time period you want, or randomize it, you know, like, so I don't know. I think it's the people cost. Like, that's what sunk the thing, which sucks because that was the best part, right? I mean, like, yeah. Like that, like, not only the main plot characters, but like, you know, like, we had super fun, like the bartenders in the
yeah.
In the lounge there were actually one of my favorite parts of the thing.
So. Absolutely. So you went to go have a drink. You're not even doing anything related to your story. And the bartenders know who you are. Because, again, you're wearing that magic band. You walk in. They know what's going on in your story. And they have fun with you. And the folks, the actors involved, from the bartenders there to the other actors that were bigger players in the story to just the crew that was there to help make sure your stay was good, they all had that information available to them. And they played into it to make the a truly immersive experience. It is, people say, like, well, I could just go LARPing and go do that instead, live action role play. You could do that, but you can't do it to this scale where you're on a damn ship that's out of Star Wars. Yes, is it basically a concrete bunker that's a studio set? Yes, it is. But I tell you what, it is so fun to immerse yourself in it. It was amazing. People lost out on this opportunity. Disney, please know that this is not a bad idea. And they said so in their outreach about the announcement to close this, that they've learned some important things. They did get some amazing feedback from people who talked about how wonderful the experience was. But now they have to figure out, how do you do it in a cost-effective way that appeals to more people? The cost was too much for the average person to go to. And frankly, I wouldn't have done it had it not been for the reason that you and Anne made that happen for us. Wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have gotten there. But the stars aligned and I got this amazing experience, which I will forever be grateful for. And then beyond that, they had too many open bookings. People were not booking more. It's too expensive. And they missed an opportunity with all the fans who don't like the sequel trilogy. Disney didn't hit a home run necessarily. I still like the sequel trilogy. I don't love it as much as I like the other ones. But all Star Wars, I enjoy. I'm in. And this is not to harp on the sequel trilogy, but to exclude 2/3 of the other IP you've got in this, you know, the trilogies and the saga overall, you really missed an opportunity to appeal to the widest possible audience you could. And that's a huge mistake. And the actors involved just did a wonderful job. And they were great with the kids. They were so good with the kids. We saw the kids that were there just having the best time. It was a true family experience. You could nerd out as much as you want as a grown up fanboy like us, or you could be a kid who's just taking in the wonder of it all and how much fun it was to be part of Star Wars. I am mourning this, Chris, because I loved this thing so much. I wanted to take my family there, and now I'm not going to be able to.
Yeah, that's what I'm really disappointed about. So I don't know, man. I mean, a way they could make it slightly cheaper. I think that's what they need to figure out. Some of the media implied that they basically were going through September because that's when they would have made back all their money.
I don't know about that.
That blows my mind. I don't think so either. But
that's not how it works either in a business, because it's not waiting until you make your money back.
Right. If they had made their, it didn't make sense to me, because, like, if you're just at the point where, like, you know, even on the ROI, that's when you should, like, boost it.
Right. And here's the thing too, is that if you're waiting to make your money back so you break even, is that more valuable than what if you took that time that you're waiting and reincorporate that space into something that makes a lot more money in the long run?
Yep.
And that's how a corporation thinks. They think about, is this a good investment of our resources? No, cut our losses now. Let's go ahead and repurpose the space, because that's valuable property that's ready to go. And maybe they repurpose it as a true Star Wars hotel. That's not the immersive experience, but it's an actual hotel, because that was only 100 rooms available. It's not a huge space. And that's something else that Disney talked about in addressing this with their announcement that they were going to be shutting it down for good. Maybe they see that there's value in that property remaining as it is and offering a true hotel experience as opposed to an immersive experience, so that you have the theme and they can still charge more for it. Or maybe they take the technology that's invested there and do something new with it that would be more appealing to everyone and in a more cost-effective way, where people aren't going to be shelling out $6,000 for one room. So, right. For two nights. And that's probably what we're going to see. Or they might just bulldoze the whole thing and repurpose the space for something new. Who knows?
I hope not.
I know. Man. I know. Because that, you felt like you were on an actual ship. It was great. So great. Yeah. I saw comments from people who were, and I have to address the critics of it, who said they felt like they were in jail. Because you're in an enclosed space and they're
on a cruise, bro.
Yeah. Well, and even the outside place where you could go and kind of get yourself, you know,
climate simulator.
Yeah, the climate simulator. It was a small space, so I get that. But you only have 100 rooms. You don't need a huge space to do that. But that was one of the criticisms.
People forget that a spaceship is basically a submarine. So
right.
If you've ever been on the Navy, you and I, you know, all of us has been on that through our ROTC experience and, you know, follow-on military experiences. But, you know, submarines are by nature very claustrophobic places.
Yes.
So that's, spaceships would be no different. So
exactly.
But it was reasonable. It was a small cruise ship. It was larger than a couple of cruise ships I've been on.
Man, it was amazing. I thought the spaces were quite wide open, especially, you know, the dining hall and the main atrium area. Everything was fantastic. The rooms, they were a little more spacious than your average, you know, low cost cruise ship, you know, stateroom. Yep. I thought it was fine. I mean, Jake and I mean, Jake is 6'6".
I'm 6 foot. We're all big guys.
Yeah, I'm 6 foot. We slept comfortably. Him probably not as comfortable as me in the bunks. I slept in a bunk and I was fine. I was fine. So I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome. So I'm mourning it. I won't spend any more time on it. Do you think there's anything else that we need to touch on with this topic before we move to the interview?
No, I just, I don't know. I hope Bob Iger can figure out a way to moving forward to, you know, utilize that stuff. And then, I don't know, what they could do is port some of that technology into, you know, they already do have, if you have the magic band, you know, there's some adventures in Galaxy's Edge that only you can do. But I hope maybe they can, you know, take some of that money and add some more, like I said, background characters that roam around Galaxy's Edge and allow you, you know, if you pay a little extra to interact with them. So
I hope that they take the lessons they learned from this and find a new way to make us fans happy. Just be more inclusive of all the Star Wars content that's out there and figure out a way to make that more affordable. So the average person, because Disney's not cheap to begin with, but when it comes to Disney, we know we're going to shell out some money. Make it so that it's within reach of the average Disney fan to make it there, not just the ultra, ultra involved with this thing. So, it needs to be more approachable. All right. We will give you any updates we hear about that. I know that Dan Wolf is planning to go one last time. He told me that he and his wife are planning to go one last time, try to get in there and sneak in for one last event. So I hope that happens for them. Now to our main event of this show. Super excited about this. Jake, Matt Tagami, myself, we had the great fortune to sit down with the very talented Diana Lee Inosanto. She portrayed Morgan Elsbeth, a.k.a. the Magistrate in The Mandalorian. Chris, you were not able to join us for this one, and I feel so bad about that because she was amazing. Yeah, I know, absolutely. But we recorded this just before Mother's Day. She herself is a mom. Let's just jump into it. We've got a terrific guest for you guys today. I'm really excited about this as we're getting the chance to bring you a conversation with an actor who has appeared in The Mandalorian and is reprising her role. This is the big news that came out recently, reprising the role on the upcoming Ahsoka series. Joining us on the Force Geeks podcast is a truly multi-talented force of nature. She's a martial artist, stunt performer, an actress, a writer, a director, and even a children's book author. She has appeared in numerous films and TV shows over the course of her career, worked on them, but for Star Wars fans, she is perhaps best known for her role as the Magistrate, Morgan Elsbeth, who appeared in the second season of The Mandalorian in the episode titled The Jedi. In addition to her work in the Star Wars universe, she has also worked on other major franchises such as The Fast and Furious, Star Trek, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, so much stuff out there. Beyond her on-screen work, she is a highly respected martial artist. Please welcome the Magistrate herself, Diana Lee Inosanto, to the podcast. Diana, thank you so much for making time for us.
Yay.
So cool to meet you.
Beautiful, beautiful welcome. Thank you.
You have such an interesting career to follow with everything that's going on. And I want to follow the ebbs and the flows and everything. We're obviously a Star Wars show, so we're going to talk a lot about Star Wars because, hey, that's what we do. But yes. You are all in. You got your Empire Strikes Back shirt on. That's you were right. One of us. Yes. I love this. What age were you when you first became associated or knew about Star Wars?
Oh, 10. At 10, I was at an international martial arts camp with my father. It was in Aspen, Colorado. And there were people from all over the world coming to see my dad and some of the other, you know, renowned martial artists for that time. And everybody decided, because, you know, Aspen at that time was not the Aspen that we know today.
Right.
It was really kind of a small town kind of feeling to it. And it was a Saturday night and everybody wanted to go to the local movie theater and see this project, this movie that called Star Wars, right? And I'd seen some of the trailers. I'm like going, wow, that looks cool. Yes, let's go see this, Dad. I went with my mom, my brother, and the whole theater was packed. And I tell you, that feeling watching Star Wars, I had never experienced something like the tone of it. And before even the movie was ending, people were jumping out of their seats like a rock concert. And just the energy. I mean, it was electric. It was just incredible. And people were just screaming. And I'll never forget that feeling. And even with my father, after we were done seeing the film, I mean, it was awesome because my dad was just like full of energy. Like, can you imagine, honey? He's talking to my mom. Like, can you imagine? I bet you they could do, you know, fight scenes with two lightsabers, you know? And, you know, he was starting to let his own creativity go. And then funny, when we returned back to California where we lived, he would go, come on, honey, you know, to my brother and I. And he's like, here, you know, and he bought later on these like sort of plastic telescope looking lightsabers we've all
seen. I had one. Yep. I know what you're talking about.
Yes, you're right. Okay. And he would just kind of go and flow with me with two of them. Talk about foreshadow.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so I've always trained weaponry with two weapons, and I know how to do two weapons as well at the same time. So, I mean, I do staff. I do many other forms of weaponry, but that was my bread and butter as a martial artist. So it's so weird that later on as an adult, I would have this fight scene with Rosario, and it was pretty much what my dad had trained me for. And, you know, it was just incredible.
What I think is so fun too about that episode that you were in, Diana, and again, it was from season two, The Jedi, and Ahsoka is brought into live action at this point. It is a pivotal episode that you are a part of. And I know from an interview that you talked before that you didn't even know what your character's name was. And the big hubbub afterward is, hey, Baby Yoda has a name. It's Grogu. But you got a name as well when you got to watch this episode. Yep. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so surreal because you got to remember when I filmed, for The Mandalorian, I'm on the set and it already feels so surreal for me as a fan that I'm there. You know, in a way I was like, God, I feel like I snuck in here somehow and got this role and I'm meeting all these people. Once I wrapped several weeks later, you know, we're on lockdown, right? And then I tell you, my brain was kind of doing a number on me. Like, did that really happen? Was I really there? So finally, when The Mandalorian season two came about, I tell you, in my episode, it still didn't feel real to me. And what made it real for me finally was honestly seeing the reaction of people like you, all the podcasts, all the fans. It made me feel finally connected, like, wow, this is real. This is happening. And then to see the joy, to see people applauding the show, and you know, particularly that episode, because that was really pivotal for even Dave Filoni, because it was about really showcasing Ahsoka and people really take to that. And the fact that show, like, it was nominated for an Emmy, it was nominated for a Golden Globe. I mean, to get that kind of accolades is incredible. And John and Dave, I mean, oh my gosh, those guys have just changed my life, and Kathleen Kennedy as well. The whole family of Lucasfilm. I mean, I'm just so grateful. But yeah, they kept it a secret that I had a name.
That must be quite an experience to like be a part of something that is basically a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah,
as much as anything else, really. Like Star Wars is just huge.
Yeah, it was
in so many ways.
Yeah, it's true. And it's stunning still to me when I think about it, because I'm a late bloomer. I mean, even though I've been around the business since 1987, actually, I was, you know, as a little girl, I was around Uncle Bruce. I was around, once in a while, movie stars like Steve McQueen and James Coburn, because they were part of the martial arts community, as you know, around my dad. But honestly, working and being in the forefront, that was, this has all been strange for me, because I've always been more of service behind the scenes, yeah. Whether for to survive, I had to be a stunt woman because I had a son with autism. And even then, I've been a trainer to the stars. So to finally just have this moment to have to be part of a cast and to be able to be part of the storytelling machine for Dave Filoni and John Favreau. And it's just mind-boggling, guys. That's all I can tell you. It's just mind-boggling.
You touched on so many things I'm excited to talk about. One, your family connection with martial arts, your father, your history with it, your work that you've done that has taken you in front of the camera once again. And beyond that, I also want to dig into just everything involved with your role from The Mandalorian to what you're doing with Ahsoka, as much as we can talk about at this point, because we're all well aware of the famous secrecy that is held tightly by Lucasfilm, and we want to respect that.
Yeah,
and make it so that you talk to us again. So with that, tell me about Celebration. That was such a cool experience to watch you and Ivana up there. She had glowing things to say about you and who you are. From everything I've seen of you in your interviews, and then even watching The Sensei, the movie that you wrote, directed, and starred in, you strike me taking on all these different matters. You seem like a very empathetic person to me. Mm-hmm. That just comes through. And she was so complimentary to you, even though you guys were the baddies on set.
That was a great quote. This.
It was. Yes. It was
great. Yeah. We have a nickname for our group, both Yvonne and I, Ray and Lars. We're called the Bond of the Baddies.
Nice.
That's awesome.
The Bond of the Baddies. Yeah. I always say, like, they should do, or my husband brought this idea. He goes, you guys should do what was that Queen album where you have like the different four faces?
The faces, yes.
And we were actually very close. But Yvonne and I tell you, I love this woman so much. My nickname for her is Heart and Soul.
Yeah.
Because she is. And you know, she's from Ukraine, and we all know what's happening over there.
Yes, yes.
And so we talked about what's happening, and she has been so grounded despite what's going on. This woman, I can't say enough about this young lady. I always tell her, like, if I had a daughter, I would be so honored if she was like Yvonne. You know, because she is young enough to be my daughter. So, but
baby sister.
Baby sister. Why not?
That's what we're going with.
Please, you know, yeah. But seriously, she's incredible. And the fact that we could share this together and have that moment on stage, holding hands and, you know, being introduced.
Was this your first Celebration?
It is.
Tell me about that.
Kind of got the news about a month before that I would be going to Celebration, because I honestly didn't know if they were going to try to keep me a secret till whenever they were going to announce it. I didn't even know they were going to announce it in August, honestly. And I was like going, oh, thank goodness. And then I cried. I just cried a mountain of tears, and I was so excited. And then I just thought, okay, hold it together. And literally when I got off the plane in London, I'm in the car with my husband and my manager and our driver, and all of a sudden we're getting texts from friends going, oh, congratulations, Diana's an Ahsoka. And I'm like, it's a trap, they're just guessing. It's a trap, don't answer it. And then all of a sudden we start getting more, you know, messages, and all of a sudden there's the trailer, and I'm like, there's a trailer. And to see that trailer and the beautiful music accompanying it, and just how magnificent everybody in the cast looked, the editing, I was screaming joy, and I'm sure I scared my driver, but he was like, oh, I get to witness this. But then the next day came, and to just all be united in the green room, and I'm seeing members from Andor, I'm seeing members from Acolyte, you know, I met Denise, I mean, I'm meeting Andy, I'm just going, holy smokes, it's just one big Star Wars family gathering, you know. And it was just so surreal. And and then, you know, a lot of us hadn't seen each other since we were filming on the set of Ahsoka. And so it was just beautiful. John was there, Kathleen, and of course, Dave Filoni. And it was just a magical thing. And then we could hear the audience, the roar. It's like a rock concert.
It's intense. Yeah.
It is intense. And I had not had really that sensation, honestly, since the time I was a little girl in that movie theater. So now this was even more electrifying. And to see how the Star Wars universe, the Star Wars fans have grown, it really is incredible. And especially coming out of the pandemic, guys, you guys know. So yeah, that was pretty powerful for all of us to see Lars. I mean, did you see Lars's face? He was like, holy smokes. I don't think any of us truly understood the power and the energy of what this would bring for all of us, for me, for Lars, for Ray, Ivana, and all the other members of our Star Wars family. You know, it truly was amazing. And of course, Rosario, she's amazing. Mary, Natasha, they're handling, because you know they had already done Star Wars Celebration. Right. They're pros. They're black belts at this. You know. it was.
And Diana, when those doors open, I mean, obviously, I've never been to one, especially on your side. When you're walking out, you can't really tell how much. But like, when did it hit you? Like when you turned around and like got to the circle.
Yeah, we can hear before the doors open. They're like, oh, be careful. There's going to be fog, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden we can hear something, the power of the just sound alone. We're like, wow. And so Yvonne and I just held hands, those doors open, and just that energy that greets you. There's nothing like it, guys. You know,
that's got to be strange, too, to do an interview where there's so much like a fever pitch of excitement and doing it live in front of a huge audience like that. Yeah. I have to imagine like that adds a little pressure to the game of like, what can I tell these folks that are just feverish for what's coming?
For me, I can't speak for Ivana, but for me, I think actually I can say this. I think the joy, the pure joy just carried us, because now it just felt like we were part of a much bigger family. Mm. And we wanted to say what was going on. Even when we were doing the Ahsoka panel, like, I don't know if you saw the photo of us. My favorite photo is the one where, and Rosario was the one who had the brilliant idea. She goes, let's get out of this table. Let's go sit on the floor with everybody else. And there's that picture of all of us with everybody behind us.
Yeah.
And we were just to watch the secret trailer.
Such a great photo.
I mean, it's my favorite photo, because this is what it was all about, becoming part of a much bigger Star Wars family. And we were right. And I love having all the fans right there behind us with us.
It definitely is. And with your first role with Star Wars, when it came to The Mandalorian season 2, was that your first brush with Star Wars, Lucasfilm? I mean, I've read a few interesting things, but was that the first time you got to work with it?
Yes. Yeah, okay. It was. It absolutely was.
And where were you when you found out that you got this role, and how did it come about? What did you do when you found out?
Of some tile, and I was looking for tile for my
perfect. Why wouldn't you be there?
I'm getting this call from my manager, like, they want you, and I'm like, what? And then, you know, this other customer is going, what the heck?
Yes,
this woman, you know, and I'm like, oh my god, and then I knew I couldn't even say what it was that I was gonna be in. I had to go outdoors. I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm a mad woman, I'm sure. It's just, again, I'm repeating myself, but it's just an extraordinary feeling. And I cried. I cried even auditioning, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, just the honor of auditioning for the Star Wars franchise and for Lucasfilm. Because I knew how much it meant to me as growing up, even as a teenager. Listen, I think I was sharing earlier with you guys, like, I actually had to kind of hide from all my fellow cheerleading friends that I was a geek.
Yeah.
I mean, I had all John Williams Star Wars albums, you know.
You were. That's great. That is definitely geekdom, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I secretly played, you know, I have a group of friends. They're called the D&D Boys, Dungeons and Dragons. I used to play Dungeons and Dragons till 4 or 5 in the morning. I didn't know any other women that did that, you know, and I kind of was like, my girlfriends were not going to understand this, you know, but yeah. Sure.
You are one of us. I love
yes,
it.
Yes, I love it. I so love so to be able to audition. And I actually thought it was a joke at first when my manager called me, because he was, first of all, we're friends.
Yeah.
But he was trying to at least, you know, at least represent me out there if he could as a producer and as a director. And even then I wasn't winning, you know, it was kind of rough. And, so when he said, you know, there's some producers and they're saying that they know who you are and they want you to audition, I'm like, I don't know anybody involved with Mandalorian. That's crazy. This is gotta be a joke. And then, he's like, let me see if this is real. And he figured out that, yeah, the casting, you know, Sarah Finn's office, yeah, they're real. And I had to sign an NDA before I could even look at the sides.
Yeah.
And I was by myself in my home with my son who has autism. My husband was away overseas teaching martial arts in Italy. And I'm like, I have no one to help me prepare for this role but myself. I really had to fall back on my theater roots. Mm-hmm. And luckily with my son, with his autism, he likes to repeat things over and over. So I had to go
there
over
lines
because the sides are so well disguised. You would never know in a million years you're reading Star Wars. Never. And and I did my own research, and I had like lines going. Even when I was sleeping, I would wake up in the morning and come up with new, fresh ideas because I was playing the lines over and over on a tape that I could just get it in me. And then I just thought the one thing I hope is that when I walk in those doors, when I audition, they at least will say, oh yeah, she's definitely an actress. She can act. Because so many people want to kind of look at are distracted by the fact that I'm a physical woman, that I've done martial arts and stunt work, and oh, she must not be an actress. And they don't realize I've had years of training, especially through my aunt and other teachers. And
some big name teachers too at that. Yes.
Yeah. That was all because of the guidance of my aunt. Lilia Inosanto, also known as Lona Nye back in the days of old Hollywood in the 70s. And I just thought, I just want them to know I can really act. This is really part of my DNA. So, and I cried. It was just an honor to audition. I didn't honestly think I would be chosen. Honestly, I just thought, because I couldn't even get an agent at that time. And so when I got the role, that's...
Who you are, just representing in this interview, who you are here is not even close to who you are in this show. You are menacing in the show. It was just like, it is a night and day, a switch flips. It is clear that you could act so well because you are intimidating in this role. Yep. It is something else.
Thank you. Thank you for loving to hate me. Yes.
I showed my son yesterday the clip because I was like, he was asking me what I was doing. I was like, oh, I'm going to be talking to her, you know, tomorrow. And he's like,
I know.
He's 9 right now. And he's just getting into Star Wars like full on. And he was just like,
what is she doing?
What about
scary.
The lightsaber? Yeah. He said that.
Yeah. My neighbors were saying that too. They're like, wow, I didn't expect that out of you. You know? Yep. Yeah, that's because of years of theater arts training and Shakespeare.
See?
Love Shakespeare. Yeah.
There it is. How did you approach this role? Because you are playing someone that is so vastly different from who you are as a person. Clearly, the training comes into play. But what do you do to approach that, to be that menacing force?
Right away, I sensed from the pages that I was reading that this was a menacing, manipulative woman, but she's a woman of power. So at first, I started looking at history. I started looking at people like Julius Caesar. I started looking at Catherine the Great. You know, I mean, this comes from my theater training. And, you know, I started looking at some of the archetypes potentially that we've seen who have been antagonists in the Star Wars universe. I started just kind of getting an understanding of the flavor of and the approach of the villains, you know. I mean, going all the way to like Spartacus, you know, the
Empire,
you know, right? And I thought, I think I'm going to tap in and see if I can, you know, and luckily I have relatives that live in England. So I'm like, maybe I'll tap into some like a sort of a mid-Atlantic British sort of speech pattern to this woman and just see if it works, you know, and really I literally write a backstory to the character of how I came into power, not knowing if that was really truly how she got into power, but just something to give me a foundation. So at least when I go into the auditioning room, I have a history of what it is to be a powerful woman who may have started out good, but then all of a sudden she's become greedy and you know, she's, you know, lived on, you know, learning to manipulate people and being powerful and not caring for other people, and because she has her own motivations. So yeah, that was kind of pretty much where it started.
I'm going to put you on the spot now to the hard topics, because there's NDAs in place, there's all sorts of secrecy. What can you tell us about Morgan Elsbeth as we look to Ahsoka? What are we going to know her better? What can you tell us at this point about what we can expect to see?
Well, yeah. Okay. So what I can tell you, you will definitely know more about Morgan's background for sure.
Good.
For sure. You're going to know more about her background. And I will definitely say, and I think it's already pretty obvious, but I mean, she's completely loyal and dedicated to Thrawn. Very loyal and dedicated to Thrawn. And I think it will start to make more sense why she is, you know, absolutely nothing will move her from being loyal to him. What else can I say? I think what people are going to, I hope, are going to be pleasantly surprised. I know I am, as a fan, is how epic this is going to feel. Especially for a streaming show. Get this on a big TV, people. Let it be your movie theater.
Yes.
I almost wish. Yeah. It is so epic. So mythic. It is so filled with action. And yet, you know, Star Wars, again, is always about family. And, yep. You know, Dave Filoni talks about it's always about hope. And I think it's just going to resonate about with all the things that we love about Star Wars from the very beginning, when we first saw the first Star Wars with Mark and Carrie and Harrison, and, you know, I mean, yeah, Harrison Ford. And yeah, I think you're going to like that.
What would you say about the action sequences you've taken part in? What would you say? Like, is, you talked epic. Do you feel, I mean, are you coming out of those things really bruised up and battle worn? I mean, what's the deal with that?
Definitely. I will tell you this. We were like a football team, and yet,
awesome.
Yet, you know, if you're a football player, and my dad worked with the Dallas Cowboys, so I think I can go into this, you know, we had our bumps and bruises, you know what I mean? And we were working some intense hours for days. I mean, just to give you an idea, you know, when I did Mandalorian, that was a 17 hour, pretty much around a 17 hour day for us. And so collectively, you know, it was incredible. All of us, the shape we had to get in, the months of training. And even me as a former stunt woman, as a martial artist, I mean, you had to train and the action is incredible on this, and to have Meen Q and her team design design the choreography. You know, I think you're going to see a lot different mix of flavor compared to maybe what we've seen before. I think I can say that. Yeah. And she's amazing. And yeah, I'm hoping you guys will all be happy. I really do.
I mean, personally for me, I mean, you've got the old school, you know, Vader and Luke. You've got Darth Maul's, you know, his Phantom Menace one. But I think, you know, with you and Rosario's, I mean, even that small.
I want more
clip,
of the spear. I want to see the spear fight. Yes.
The small clip that you guys did. I mean, you just talked about it a little bit ago. How, like, when you guys got on stage, you're like, "Whoa!" Like, what it meant to you guys. But even as a viewer, it was epic. I mean, it's kind of a new age epic of how big this can be, not just for the symbolism of, you know, two women leads, you know, and all that, but I mean, you guys have those background. I mean, you have that background, and Rosario has the heart and passion of what she's doing.
And she's a natural athlete. You can do anything at Rosario. She's a natural athlete. So she,
and whether you can say or not, I just hope that that's a preview of what we get to see, you know, in coming forward. Like, I want to see you bust out that spear and maybe a couple other weapons
for what are they? The shorts, the Screama sticks. Is that what I'm thinking of? Like, one per hand going up against lightsaber.
Oh, you guys will see. Trust me. Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Talk about Dave and him heading, like, I know that John's involved, but this is Dave's vision. What was it like working with Dave on this? And what do you think that he, when he is, you know, working on all this, what did you pick up from him and what he's bringing? What's the vibe he's bringing with everything?
He's so zen.
Yeah.
I say zen, meaning he is a calm, and you need that out of a director. You know, I think there's, and John is wired that same way. There's a calmness to them. So, and you need that. And yet he's so specific with his vision, and he can guide you, and he can tell you backstory and history. Cause if there's questions you have about choices or why the character is there, I mean, he's like a walking and, you know, encyclopedia. He can tell you, you know, what's happening with this character, why this is happening, what your approach might be. And that's important, you know, when you're an actress and you're hearing this from a director, that they have, they're pretty crystal clear on the direction of where the scene is supposed to go, because X, Y, and Z is supposed to happen. Yeah. He's a magnificent director, and everybody just wants to just soldier and be there for him and to make this happen. I mean, honestly, we lock arms, and I'm not saying this as lip service. There is a really beautiful family element to the Lucas family, to Lucasfilm, to this Ahsoka set. It was incredible. I love every one of those crew members, every one of, you know, ILM, everybody, hair, makeup, electricity, everybody there. It's incredible. And then John also was just a beautiful force walking through from set to set. Cause sometimes you have different units going at the same time. And I don't know how they held it together, but they do.
We can't wait to see you in this show. We're so glad you're coming back. We're short on time at this point, but I want to go through. We have a set of 7 questions we like to ask people. And it's putting yourself in the shoes of if you're a Jedi, that sort of thing. So let me roll through these. Okay. And it's the first thing rapid that pops fire in your head. It's a rapid fire deal.
Oh boy.
So
oh boy.
First question, okay, no fine thinking, just answering. Okay. You're hanging out in a space cantina. Who are you? Are you a smuggler? Are you a hero? Who are you in that space cantina?
Man. Chewbacca.
Yeah. Right. Nice.
What's your lightsaber color?
Purple.
All right. I like it. Do you have a favorite quote from Star Wars?
Oh, shoot. Well, always, may the Force be with you. Always.
Can't go wrong with that.
Yes.
Let's say you're a pilot. What are you flying? What's your starship?
Destroyer.
The big one. Oh, bringing nice the big guns. I like it. Okay. Where do you stand? There's a theory out there that Jar Jar Binks was actually a Sith Lord and manipulating everything all the time and putting forward this I'm a bumbling oaf thing. Where do you stand on this theory? Do you like that idea, or do you think it's fine as is?
I think it's fine as is. I think it's fine as is.
Who is the true hero of Star Wars overall? Who's the overall true hero?
Always George Lucas.
There you go.
And your favorite Star Wars movie of all time, or series, as the case may be?
The original, man. The one that started it all.
I yes love it.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
She is Diana Lee Inosanto, and she is simply terrific. Thank you so much for joining us. We wish you well in all your pursuits. We look forward to seeing you on screen and back here again with us in the future, hopefully.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Diana.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You guys are amazing. Thank you.
We had the great fortune, Chris, to speak with her for about an hour about a great many things, including her relationship with the legendary Bruce Lee, her role as an activist, the importance of inclusion in Hollywood, and that recent moment that Asian actors had at the Oscars, her children's book that she wrote, and how she forged her own path in Hollywood. It's great, and you can watch the whole thing on our YouTube channel. Just check us out. You search at the Force Geeks on YouTube. You'll get the whole thing there. It is really, really fantastic. And Chris, I hope that we can have her back on the show after Ahsoka finishes. I'd love to get her back on this. I really feel like she is going to be someone that we're going to see a lot more of elsewhere, because she is so talented. And I'm just so excited. She had a really rough road to hoe. And in the full interview, you'll hear about her path. Like, she was on the old show back in the 80s, Moonlighting. She's got those credits. Look at her IMDb page. She's been part of a whole bunch of stuff. She talked about knowing Boba Fett actor, seeing him back in the day, and how he played a role in helping her to get her first role. And I just forgot his name now. I can't believe it. Temuera Morrison. And you'll find out how that connection with Temuera actually helped her career move forward in the stunt world. So, and you hear about her husband and the role they both play in Hollywood. There's so much cool stuff, Chris. And I really think that a lot of people can get an exciting thing. And this is, it's also worth knowing that May is Asian Pacific Islander month. She talks about her heritage and her father and the role that her father played in the martial arts world. Very, very big name. And that's how her association with Bruce Lee came about. That's actually her godfather. So she's just charming. She was so engaged. She's an incredibly articulate person and just a true joy. So I'm hoping we get a chance to talk to her again, Chris. What were some of the takeaways for you as you were listening to this? Because she talked about Ahsoka, she talked about The Mandalorian, the geniuses that both Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni are, and how zen Dave is with this. What are you taking away? Because it's so hard to ask her about Ahsoka because she can't say much at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that she's saying it's epic, I think, is a good thing. You know, we've been talking about it. Like, we need, you know, one of the problems people have with Mandalorian is the scale, right? So the scale is not, you know, it's a smaller scale, and the way they're doing it with the volume and all that good stuff. So it makes me happy to hear that she said it's going to be very epic. I think, you know, the Thrawn aspect, like, obviously, probably the most, Heir to the Empire is probably the most successful Star Wars property outside of the shows and movies, so I think, you know, that'll be cool to get to explore that more. And then, you know, her talking about the martial arts and how intense that stuff was, like, I hope that means that we're seeing some really good, you know, classic, you know, classic Star Wars battles, but with a new twist, it sounds like, with a slightly different martial arts. So you know, the awesome thing, I think, you know, we've never interviewed anybody that was involved in Star Wars that wasn't a fan, but it's really cool when you have like true fans like her that have been like fans since they were
kids. She
totally
was.
You know, and they talk about it in that way. And you just, you know, the fact that the production is a family, and, you know, I mean, so, you know, in my day job, like, you know, one of my biggest things is trying to, you know, get teams to do really, really tough stuff. And, you know, that is the way to make any business, in any endeavor, sports, you know, the military, like anything, but especially something that's really difficult, like having people feel like they're not at work with coworkers, they're doing something cool with their family, is the way to produce something really good. So if that's the dynamic on this set, that bodes really well for Ahsoka being a real success, which, you know, I think you're with me, like, we're pretty big Rebels fans. And, you know, I think we're really hoping that this show, you know, really does good. So I'm super stoked about that. Yeah, I don't know. She's a really, you know, Nate and I were chatting a little bit while the interview was playing. Like, she's a really good interview, man.
She is.
I mean, there's some actors that you can tell that, like, they know how to say their lines, but they have a hard time. Like, she is, like, she was a really, really awesome, really engaged interviewer. So I don't know. I'm it makes me even more stoked for Ahsoka, and, like, I don't know how we're gonna wait for that thing to come out.
I know, but, August.
Yeah, it's another couple months, but, man, it really fires me up to hopefully get to see that. And then I do hope once Ahsoka drops, like, after the season's run, hopefully we can bring her back on, and then she can talk a little bit more about, you know, some of the behind the scenes stuff. And
I can't wait for that.
I think that'd be really, really cool, because, you know, obviously right now she's really tied on what she can say, but it'd be good to get some of that insight. So, yeah.
And I did try to get hints in there, like, hey, I want to see you with the staff, I want to see you with the spear again, because there is a lot of talk that the first half of the season of Ahsoka will be based before the events of what we saw taking place in The Mandalorian. And I was kind of hoping to hear her say that, because there's no way for her to have that spear again, because the spear was melted down, right?
Right.
The armorer in the season 3 of Mandalorian.
Melted it down.
Yeah, it gets melted down. Or I guess it might have been Book of Boba. I can't remember. It might have been Book of Boba, now that Book I think Boba. About it. Yeah, yeah, so that doesn't exist anymore. So for it to have a spear, unless she got a new one made, which I doubt, would kind of provide that foundation that she is. She's locked down, man. She's doing a great job. She didn't take the bait.
She didn't take any bait.
She said, you'll have to wait and see, and you'll like what you see. So, I mean, she's not confirming anything. So we're not going to push too hard on the NDA stuff because we want to have her back. You know, we want to respect that and make sure that we're not getting anybody in trouble. But she was fantastic, and I'm just so excited. And just a lovely person. And she really is, you can tell, a fan. I mean, she was sporting her Empire Strikes Back shirt when she came on to do the show with us. She had a baby Yoda just above her on her mantle. I mean, but beyond that, her pedigree was absolutely there. Because she talked about her resume of being a fan ever since she was a kid. And I absolutely believe it because she really, you know, she talks about it in a way that is absolutely showing, not just all talk.
Well, I think it's funny, you know, she's talking about secretly playing D&D. It is really entertaining to me to see how a lot of these things that, you know, traditionally were like, you know, when we were growing up, we're like, you're kind of a nerd if you like Star Wars.
Don't admit that.
You know, like, you know, like that stuff is now so mainstream. And like, so I think it's fascinating to hear stories like hers. I mean, obviously, you know, she said she was a cheerleader. Like, you know, she was going to high school in like Southern California. Like, you know, it's kind of
cheerleader at the D&D game. Are you kidding me?
That's right. You know, so it's like. That's pretty cool. So, like I said, I always just enjoy hearing people's stories of being fans, and especially the people that are making this stuff. And then hearing her talk about Dave and John, that's the other part to me that just, I don't know. We've talked about it so much, man. Like, I just hope that they continue to give those guys like a lot of the creative control, like, you know, overall guiding the story along and helping the other folks that are dabbling in the sandbox, you know, maintain continuity and you know, get Star Wars right, because I think, you know, it's awesome. So yeah, I can't wait. I'm so stoked. The only thing I wish we would have been able to get, you know, try and get out of her is like, is there an epic space battle?
Yeah.
I assume there will be, but you know, I mean, we saw the video of Hera in the Ghost, you know, chasing some ship, but I wonder, you know, it'll be interesting to see. So
it is interesting. And speaking of Hera, the actress who plays her, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who just happens to be married to Ewan McGregor in real life, which is interesting. They have their Star Wars connection. she has recently talked about how Rebels, not necessarily this is a continuation of Rebels, but how a lot of Rebels influences what takes place in the show. And Dave's been very careful to say, you don't have to have watched Rebels to enjoy this show. But those that have watched are going to have a lot more context for what's going on. They're being very careful to make sure that they're creating a project that will be something that people are like, well, I don't know what's going on. They're good about that. And they learned that also, I think, from Book of Boba Fett, those lessons there that took place, that they're like, well, we did put in Mandalorian episodes in there. We maybe shouldn't do that in the future so that people can watch this and know what's going on without having to watch this other. Yeah. Now, for us, we're going to do that, of course.
Yeah.
But for the casual fans, they're trying to be mindful of that. So I think that's the good news. If you have not watched Rebels, the animated series, you're still going to enjoy the show, but you'll just have more context for everything.
You should go watch Rebels, though.
Absolutely.
We've talked about it before. Like, if you're... I was not into cartoons. Like, I'm not really a super cartoon guy.
I'm not either
at least
all.
I haven't been since, you know,
kids.
Probably Robotech was the last cartoon that I would have watched by myself on TV. Yeah. But you know, a little bit, you know, the lead in to the sequel trilogy led me to watch that, you know, when it came out on Disney Plus, and I think Rebels is a lot more accessible. Clone Wars is kind of a commitment, man. There's, you know, seven seasons, a little bit of a slog. But Rebels is, I think, you know, ramps up faster, and, you know, the story is just really, really.
You just got to get through the first season of Rebels. You just got to get through that first season.
First season a little bit low, but then after that, it really ramps up.
The second just goes from there. Yeah. It's great because you get all sorts of great stuff like Vader, Ahsoka, all sorts of cool, Maul, also, you know, just tons of great stuff. So, all right, let's move on to our next topic here because we're returning our attention to actor Freddie Prinze Jr., who recently expressed his reluctance to reprise his role as Jedi Kanan Jarrus. In a recent appearance on Christian Harloff's The Big Thing podcast, Freddie spoke about how he's been effectively forced to return to the character several times, with one instance involving being asked to voice a younger version of Kanan in season one of The Bad Batch, as you'll recall. He said, quote, I was asked to. Yeah, I didn't necessarily want to. I feel like every time you hear Kanan's voice since Rebels ended, it really kind of dilutes his impact. I don't think it dilutes it, but I mean, Freddie has what Freddie says. I mean, he's not a guy who holds back. If you watch his interviews, he does not hold back his opinion on things. I like Freddie, but he also has his clear thoughts on things, and he has no problem if it comes off as being abrasive, which I feel like he did a bit in this interview that he did.
Yeah, that was a little.
It's almost like he's annoyed by it. You might also remember that he did a brief voiceover in episode 9 for Rise of Skywalker. He was one of the voices of the Jedi that were helping Rey. He was pretty ticked off about that. I've seen some things him talking about, like, you know, potentially not getting his paychecks that he's owed, apparently. I don't know if that's part of the bad blood or just where he's talking about, you know, there's residuals involved or something. I don't know. But that has been talked about as a possible motivator for some of the bad blood that he's feeling toward that. But he says, clearly, it's about the fact that he feels like it's diluting what happened in Kanan's sacrifice at the end, and it's not worth having him come back again. But Freddie throws it down pretty hard. He's not doing anything ever again.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure, like, he's Freddie Prinze Jr., right? And he's he's married to Sarah Michelle Gellar, so he's got a lot of money, and he doesn't have to worry about money. So it's easy to, I guess, it's probably easy to to poo-poo that stuff when you're that way. I mean, thank you, Freddie, for bringing us greats like Summer Catch.
But he was Kanan, and you can't forget that.
I don't know, man. I mean, I get what he's saying, but I mean, the Force Ghost thing, like, I don't see how you can be pissed about that. The young Kanan, like, same thing. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I just don't get it. So he's clearly not happy. So something, maybe it was the pay thing, or I don't know.
I have no idea.
It'll be interesting to see if he gets over it eventually. So I don't know.
I thought it was great to see him in The Bad Batch as a young Kanan and showing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a way to tie the story in, not just as a brief, throwaway sort of just tie. I think it's something that really shows what was going on. And we see what Kanan becomes later on. So seeing the moment where his master falls, I think was really important, and I think it was great that the Bad Batch used that as a device.
A backstory. I mean, like, I would like to know more about his backstory. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. So now there's like a little part of me that in the back of my mind is like, well, is this like smokescreen? Because then there's going to be a Kanan flashback in Ahsoka. I think no, but man, like, I just can't discount it now. I don't know. Probably not.
I have no idea. So, Freddie, best of luck to you. We love what you did for Star Wars fans. I also love that you will talk about definitively your thoughts on the Force and how it works, balance, all those sorts of things, and studying at the feet of Dave, and he studied at the feet of George. So you have some pretty strong feelings about
things. Cool.
He's entertaining. I do enjoy his interviews. He's opinionated, and he does not pull back from what he really thinks, and I also value that quite a bit too. But he's pretty harsh on being part of things after he was done playing the character. And I hope that eases up over the years, because we loved what he did. We thought it was great. Moving on, let's talk about what I'll call an exciting rumor, but I must totally push the fact this is absolutely rumor, no verification whatsoever. And normally I would steer clear of these things, and I'm tempted to just stop myself right now before I go forward, but I'm gonna indulge.
But you're gonna go there anyway.
This could be the poop flinger, seeing what sticks to the wall. We'll see. But
legit or shit. We'll
see. Yeah, exactly. There is speculation surrounding Dave Filoni's forthcoming Star Wars film that we all know is coming. Reports suggest that the movie could be a reimagining of the beloved Timothy Zahn novel, Heir to the Empire, and that will in fact be the name of his movie. I don't buy that. But keep in mind, again, this is all not confirmed. You need to take it with a grain of salt. This all coming from a tweet that came out. And again, it's coming from Twitter. So just know that. But the tweet is from My Time to Shine Hello. At My Time to Shine Hello is who this came from. No idea who that is. So again, whatever. But shocker, not really. Dave Filoni's movie is called Star Wars: Heir to the Empire. Jon Favreau is only producing for now. It's all Filoni. Again, this throws back to the 1991 novel. That 1991 was a huge year for Star Wars because it had been dormant for so long. You got the comic book series of the Dark Empire that came back out. And then also on top of that, which, by the way, is some of the inspiration for what happened in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of the Rise of Skywalker's plot is directly out of there.
Yeah.
You know, Palpatine transferring his essence into a clone.
Yep, Dark Horse Comics that did that. Then you also have the fact that 1991 also brought us the Timothy Zahn novels, Grand Admiral Thrawn. 91 was pivotal to show that there was still more Star Wars content to be created. And the expanded universe was born from that time and just ran from there. But, I mean, will there be elements of Heir to the Empire in the movie? I wouldn't be shocked if that was the case. It was a great plot line. There's a reason why that series of novels was as explosive to Star Wars as it was and as successful. I mean, New York Times bestseller list for those novels, they did exceptionally well. And they've already incorporated Thrawn from those books. So, I mean, we'll incorporate it. Why not? If it's a great storyline, they've shown Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have shown no signs of shying away from incorporating some of the best elements of the EU and bringing it into the fold. And it would make for a great showdown. It really would. And perhaps what we're seeing in Ahsoka play out with these other Jedi that are coming to play, these dark Jedi that we're seeing, where, you know, we actually heard Diana talking about Ivana Sokno and her character and then Ray Stevenson, who's also playing this, you know, maybe that's kind of the knock on Jorah Saboth that we saw, or Sabath, I can't remember how it's said, but those characters from the Heir of the Empire novels, maybe these are clones of those characters. Maybe Ivana Sokno is a female clone of Luke. I don't know. There's a lot of conjecture out there. It's all pretty cool to hear what's possible, and I am not going to be at all disappointed if elements of Heir of the Empire are worked in.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I severely doubt it'll just be Heir to the Empire as the title, and that'll exactly follow the book. Yeah, I mean, Dave has been pretty clear in some of the interviews that, you know, it's kind of bringing together and not wrapping up, but like sort of like tying together threads of the Mandoverse. So what'll be interesting to me is how much do they do that, wrapping up the different threads of the Mandoverse, Ahsoka, you know, Book of Boba Fett, you know, Mando, and how much are they trying to like link to Rise of Skywalker? Sorry, not Rise of Skywalker, but The Force Awakens, you know?
All of it. Yep. The entire sequel trilogy.
Yeah, it'll be really fascinating to see where they go with that. So I don't know. I'm curious. I definitely think there's going to be elements of Heir to the Empire. I just don't think it'll be like as much as maybe, you know, a direct movie adaptation of the book.
I would be so surprised if they even called it Heir to the Empire. Yeah, I would think there's a different name. I mean, because Heir to the Empire is really being worked up in the Ahsoka series, with Thrawn appearing there and showing him working in, you know, the wild space areas to bring about, you know, the fleet, the lost fleet.
Well, so that's exactly it. Like, you know, like it seems like that is going to happen in Ahsoka versus, you know, in the movie. So it'll be interesting to see, though.
Yep. Can't wait for it. And we're all dying to know. And we're going to have to wait quite a while because there's more Mandoverse shows to wrap up before we get to that point. And we're years out from his movie. And it's still development. So don't get too excited. Don't put the cart before the horse. There's a lot of time to change the title, even if that were what was discussed as the title. All right. Let's talk about some exciting news involving Ahsoka actress Natasha Lyubordidze in the live-action role of Sabine Wren, a fan favorite character, of course, from the show that you and I love, Star Wars Rebels. Natasha recently revealed that she will wield a lightsaber as she steps into the shoes of Sabine Wren, adding another layer of anticipation to the upcoming Ahsoka series. Now, in conversations that she had with Empire, just a great magazine and awesome interviews, Bordizzo revealed the weapon she's using, and again, that's the lightsaber. She said, quote, "It's been really hard talking about my fight training during talking about the fact that it's saber training, which is literally all I've been doing for so long." That is so telling that she is wielding a lightsaber. And of course, we can speculate to what lightsaber that would be, but I got to think it's Ezra Bridger's lightsaber that she's using.
I think she said it was green, right?
Well, then there you go.
I think so.
Yeah,
so
it's Ezra's lightsaber.
I'll have to look back, but I'm pretty sure somewhere it said it was green. So that's what's leading people to conclude that it must be Ezra's.
I saw that. I didn't write it down in my notes, so I can't confirm definitely, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what I saw. But I have to think it is. It makes the most sense. And if she did say it's green, then there you go. I mean, it's Ezra's lightsaber for sure. And she has the training, you know. And I love that this is interesting because, you know, George talked about how only Force users could use lightsabers and because of the power involved. But he also was kind of wrong because go back to Empire Strikes Back and who sparked up the lightsaber for Luke when he was, you know, needing to be fed into a Tauntaun's belly to stay warm.
Han Solo.
So it's not to, you know, and we saw the struggle, which I think George is being honored with his thoughts on that. The struggle of using, of wielding a lightsaber when you are a lay person who's not a Force sensitive, because we saw Din Djarin struggle with that. But if you have the proper training with it, which clearly Sabine got with a couple of Jedi, and on top of that, you know, we saw how skillful Kitty Sackhoff was with her character of Bo-Katan and being used to working with it. She clearly had training with it, so it is possible for an average person to learn how to use it effectively. So there you go. Exciting. We're going to get lightsaber fights, and it's not going to be just Ahsoka, which is great because we love our lightsabers, and Ahsoka is going to give us that. Where the Mandalorian has kind of fallen short to some degree other than the darksaber, we're going to get a lot more. And that by what Diana has said about the level of action that's coming for Ahsoka, I don't think anybody's going to be disappointed. So that's great. Lastly, Chris, you brought this up just moments before we recorded our show. The 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi is May 25th. Now, that I knew about, but this I did not. What if the ending was different to Return of the Jedi? Well, it almost was. This is so crazy. According to the author, J.W. Rensler's The Making of Return of the Jedi, George Lucas and Lawrence Kasdan, famous screenwriter involved with the saga, considered having Luke, after defeating the Emperor, would have taken Vader's mask and put it on himself and proclaimed himself Vader, killing the rebel fleet and then proclaiming himself the Emperor of the Galaxy. Whoa. Huge, vast difference. And ultimately, George thought that was way too heavy an ending for a kid's movie. Chris, you spotted the article and shared it with me right away, which there's been rumors of this sort of thing for a long time, but to have it put in the book from J.W. Rensler to share this, that just really blows my mind.
Yeah, and the citation is transcripts of, you know, kind of the script development between George Lucas and Lawrence Kasdan. So I mean, you know, is it real? Is it not? You know, I think, you know, there's been hints of this enough that I think there's, you know, that it's legitimate. So, but it is fascinating to, you know, They talk in there how it was originally 12 movies, 4 trilogies, then 9, and then 6 is what he landed on. So I don't know. I mean,
because he ran out of gas.
Yeah, well, and yeah, exactly. And you think what it would have been like had they gone that route, you know, and maybe note to Rian Johnson, you could subvert expectations some, but probably not with major stuff like that without losing fans. So
yep.
It's good they went the way they did.
There's actually a video I'm watching on YouTube about the screenwriter who goes through and explains why the subversion of expectations of what happened in the sequel trilogy really was great, but they lost their way with undoing some of the character development along the way that really just didn't mesh with what they were doing. And he's actually put it upon himself to fix all the issues with it and rewrite by keeping certain things that had to happen, like, you know, with Rey having all these powers in a way that seems unexplainable. You know, the whole Mary Sue thing that comes into play, which I don't care about that stuff. He talks about having Luke go isolate himself and in the First Order being a thing, all these different things from the sequel trilogy, keeping those in place and having these things happen, but giving better character development and story treatment to understand why they happen, as opposed to seeming just so out of left field. And it's about an hour long YouTube video, and I'm just absolutely enjoying it because he's right. It's not that these things, the subversion of expectations is wrong. It's just how you got there.
Yeah.
I mean, that matters.
Yeah. It just, there's certain things you can't, I don't know. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, it would have taken Luke Skywalker, who, you know, for 76 to, you know, when Return of the Jedi came out in 83, was everybody's hero that everybody wanted to be for 7 years, and would have made him the villain. I don't think it would have worked. So,
could you imagine what fans would have thought back in 1983 at the end of the movie to see Luke put on the Vader mask, proclaim himself Vader, and take out all his friends, take out Han, take out the entire Rebel fleet, and proclaim himself Emperor of the Galaxy? Holy crap, man! That would have been nuts. Nuts.
Well, so, and this is why, like, we've talked about a lot over the years of this podcast, like, you got to understand what Star Wars is. It's a serialized science fiction designed for kids to watch on Saturday morning, you know, like that at its root is what made it great. So, you can deviate from that some, you can go to Andor and make it serious, but the overall theme still kind of has to go back to that, you know, good versus evil. Like, you can have Shades of Grey, you know, Andor, a little bit, you know, Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian, but you got to go back to like the epic battle of good versus evil. Like, mm-hmm. you know, in the end, it can be gray, but like, you know, I don't know, man. So
it always comes back to the hero's journey.
The hero's journey.
The book that it was built upon. Yep. That's what it comes down
that's
to.
What it
that
is
Star yep. Wars. Check it out. J.W. Rensler's book, The Making of The Return of the Jedi, is really something else to explore that concept of what would have happened had Luke given into the dark side and taken the Vader helmet and proclaimed himself Emperor of the Galaxy. Just crazy stuff. Chris, that's going to wrap it up. That's our show for the day. Remember, you can watch the full uncut interview of Diana Lee Inosanto, and I'm telling you, you will not be disappointed. She was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, she's phenomenal.
Talented person. Such a unique and interesting path she's walked in Hollywood. All these brushes with major stars and all the things that she's done, working on these huge projects along the way, and she's getting her time to shine as an actor, as an auteur, and I'm just so happy for her because I can't wait to see her in more stuff. I did watch her movie The Sensei, by the way, that she wrote and directed, because she talks and you'll see this in the interview, she talks about being a person of color in Hollywood, and on top of that, being someone who kind of is half Asian, half white, in these two worlds that she has, one foot in, one foot out, and how she said there just weren't a lot of things for people like her, and so she had to kind of carve her own path. Just really, really inspiring and just wonderful. She's an activist and she's involved in a lot of great causes, and really just, we wish her well, and we're cheering her on the full way, so I can't wait to see her in more stuff. Go check it out. YouTube, just search The Force Geeks. You'll find our channel and you can watch her full uncut interview. She's fantastic. You can also follow her on Instagram as well. And we've got that information for you on the YouTube channel too. So check that out. Our thanks again to Diane for her wonderful energy. And I think we could have talked to her for hours on end if we didn't wrap things up. That will do it for us. Remember, you can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Fire up the old Alexa device. Say, hey, Alexa, play The Force Geeks. You are in business with us. Don't forget to subscribe. Leave us those positive reviews and engage with us on social media. We love getting the chance to talk with you. Emails as well, just at theforcegeeks@gmail.com. You can just do all of that, and we will certainly get in touch with you. We will be back. Jake will be joining us again in the future. Again, thanks to Matt Tagami, who runs our social media for Facebook.
He's
Instagram,
a hero.
And he arranged that interview. It's all him. He's the hero of the day,
He's
sure.
He's the man.
He's on the hero's journey himself. All right. With that, thanks for connecting with us, and may the Force be with you always.